Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
First, please welcome John Hawkst. And what an amazing debut performance. It's hard to believe it's her first film performance. Elizabeth Olsen. Well, it's such a powerful film and great performances by both of you, so congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you.
What is it like to play this role? One thing that really struck me about the role of that you played is it's a very internal role in a way. A lot of what's interesting is sort of seeing what memories you have, what's going on inside. So I would think that would actually be kind of a tough thing to do for first performance.
You know what? I'm going to say something that I might regret, but I think sometimes words give away actors a lot. Like sometimes if you say something, it's like, oh, that didn't come out right, or I don't know. But I actually thought it was a gift to not get to say too much and to try and, because then you can actually go through thoughts more clearly and fully without having to put words to them. And I don't know. I thought it was more lucky to be able to more react than speak about everything.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear from both of you about just your initial reaction to the script, because I think these are both sort of difficult characters in different ways, and I think both of you were attracted to the part. So, I guess could you talk first about what drew you to playing this character, Patrick?
Sure. I really liked the script as a whole. It was intriguing and elusive, and didn't it asked a lot of questions and didn't provide easy answers. So, as a whole, I really loved the story, and that's where I begin. And then the character of Patrick was something I didn't really have a real clear handle on, but that's an interesting way to start, I think, is to admit you know nothing and go from there. And I hadn't played a leader of men too often. That was interesting. And then loved the didn't know who'd play the role of Martha, but just thought it was a terrific role, and loved that take on the cult idea as opposed to making it about the leader and the typical thing we see. It seemed unusual in that way, and that was great.
Hmm. I too, the first thing that I liked about the script is I liked reading it as an audience member, as a reader. It was fun for me to be actively trying to figure out a puzzle and this mystery and link all the different clues together at the end. And I don't think parts are written really for young men or women like this, where it really truly challenges you to work for a part, and also at the same time, if it is a difficult role, a director is definitely not looking for an unknown actor, and Sean was, and that's what was really lucky for me is that he had open auditions, so I could go in for it.
And had you thought about doing movies for a while? I mean, obviously, have actors in your family, and this is your first big role. So, what was the process? What did it take you to come to this point?
I didn't really want to work until I graduated college, which didn't end up happening. It all kind of got muddled together just by nature of living in New York.
Yeah.
I wanted to do movies. I didn't really understand them. I understood theater better. But I met a great woman who's become my agent, and she's taught me a lot, and I now have like a huge love of making movies. I think it's it's really collaborative and a lot of fun, and I thought it wouldn't be so collaborative, and that's why I like theater so much.
I'd love to hear both of you talk about like what you sort of how you understood your characters, and what you sort of grasped about them, because you, in a way, you sort of have to like and feel sympathetic to your characters. So I guess, yeah, just I'll start with you and then ask.
Well, what I loved about her is that she never gave up. Like, even at the lake house, when she thinks people are coming after her, she's putting up a fight back. She's not acting a victim. I just had a lot of empathy for her. To me, the scariest thing really that could happen to someone is for them to not fully understand what's real or what's not. So like a movie like A Beautiful Mind to me is like the hardest movie to sit through as an audience member. So for me, being able to play with fear and paranoia and all of those parts of her reality, that was really interesting to me. And then the challenge was really to try and create a positive hope and light for her, because I think you need to have that, especially at the farmhouse, that she's progressing as a person, and then she just backtracks when she gets back to her family.
Okay. And how about you, Patrick?
Well, yeah. Again, people have compared it to things I've done, I guess, in the past. But to me, it was a different role again, because it was a person who led, which isn't normally. I don't haven't often done that in film. I also loved just kind of how openly the role was written. It left a lot of room for exploring, and it wasn't really hard and fast. It was something that I felt like I could swim around in a little bit and hopefully find some interesting things. It left again room for mystery and for invention.
And how was it sort of playing the, I mean, it's a character that has these two sides, that you can sort of feel the seductive power of Patrick, you can feel how he can be a leader, but there's also that brutality, I mean, at the same time. So I don't know what playing that as an actor, what is, how do you sort of balance those sides?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was kind of in the whole approach, really, that I was interested in, and was relieved before I think I even accepted the role, talked to Sean about the approach being that rather than take the kind of cliche cult leader that we've seen a lot, and trying to make him a believable human being, and someone that people might conceivably get behind. The reason being, I always begin again with what is the story, and then how can I help tell the story in the best way through the character I'm playing, in the most interesting way. And felt like it would be the best choice, and Sean agreed to make Patrick someone that an audience member would understand why a woman like Martha might go with. If the guy was just too obviously a charlatan personification of evil, mustache twirling kind of Svengali weird dude, I mean, then I think that it doesn't reflect well on Martha's character. And I think that on the page she's a complicated person, and I think it's something that you did so wonderfully, and it seemed like best to serve the story by making Patrick someone believable.
And the song is quite a wonderful scene, and I understand that you improvised that. I mean, that also sort of shows these two sides of him. But could you talk about that, sort of how you made
sure I made that song up on the spot. I'm just kidding. It's actually, it wasn't improvised at all. It's a Jackson Frank song, and he was a 1960s folk singer, but it was played live, which is rare in films except for Dogma movies and things like that. But it was actually a cool kind of risk to pull off on a chilly day. And yeah, I guess we did three times, and they just picked one. There's no edits in it or anything. It's just, a pretty raw take. You can actually, if you ever see the movie or hear the song again, you can hear my fingers. It's the third time through in about 15 minutes. You can hear my fingers really tiring out. By the end, they're barely putting the strings down. But that's real and human, and that's where the music is for me always anyway, is in that kind of thing. But a great joy to do. I would say quickly that Sean Durkin, the director, always saw music in the film. I think no matter who did it ultimately, and on the page, I believe it just said something like Patrick plays a song. And then Sean looked online, typed in Martha, typed in Marcy, typed in Marlene, and strangely found a song called Marlene and a song called Marcy's song back-to-back on the same record that had come out many years ago by Jackson Frank. He listened to the songs. They're apocalyptic and surreal and dreamlike and just perfect for the movie. So.
Great. Okay, I want to ask something, and then we'll open it up to the audience. But I'm curious about how locations, how these particular locations sort of played into the filming and the process of making it, because it really is a film that pits these two worlds against each other, and they're very vividly realized.
Yeah. Well, we filmed everything at the Colt first at the farmhouse, and it sounds like there's a bird around a microphone or something. Yeah, like that's exactly what it is. Everyone run.
I've got my knife just in case. Yeah, don't worry.
We had no at the actual farmhouse where we were filming. There's no cell phone reception. We had one landline for the production gang. They had dial up internet, I think. and then we all lived very communally in this great motel in upstate New York, and we definitely became a close-knit family. And then we had a company move and said goodbye to all the actors at the farm and moved to a different motel that was very remote and on a golf course, but it was no one was ever there who actually worked there. So if an alarm went off, no one would show up for a good 30, 45 minutes. It was very bizarre. And then, but then, anyways, has nothing to do with what I'm answering. But
it's interesting.
But the lake house all of a sudden just felt colder, and the weather was colder. The material just became so much heavier. I felt exhausted every day, just for some reason, and it just had a totally different feeling. It's great that we had such an amazing cast. Sarah and Hugh are hilarious people. Mm. So that brought light to everything, and as well as the crew is a bunch of funny young guys, a couple girls in there, and it was very helpful to be able to film the farm first and live in upstate New York for the whole entirety of the film without ever going back to New York City.
Okay, raise your hand if you have questions, and I'll repeat them. If anybody wants to jump in, there's one up there. Go ahead. Oh, he wants an explanation of the ending. Okay.
Well, I can try and answer best the way Sean might, because I've done a lot of Q&As with him, and the question about the ending always comes up. And then I'll give my two cents. I know that his goal is that he's just trying to tell this one character story. He's not trying to make ends meet or give any true like satisfaction of tying things up at the end for the audience. He just really wants to focus on this character's journey, and at that moment he wanted to end it where that character was or that person was at that time. And his hope is that the questions that everyone's asking about the ending would be aligned with the same types of questions that Martha was also asking in trying to figure out what really was happening. For me, what I find really special about the ending and brave is that, again, about not having it be all tied up, but the movie begins and ends in transitions, and everything in life is a transition, but we go to the movies to see something finished and like with a button at the end. And it's a nice story to have and go home with, and where there's a crazy twist at the end. But our film is really just trying to capture this one young woman's psychological experience going through this step in her life. And Sean also talked with lots of people who had tried to go through this recovery, and he wanted to stay true to their experiences and not create something out of left field.
Okay. Any more? No? Do we have one from two? Do you have one? Okay, so somebody in Twitter land has a question. So
great.
Cameron,
John
Cameron
and I are
will.
The best people with Twitter.
Yeah, we inspire a great deal of discussion.
We're the best people for this question. Oh gosh.
I'm Cameron from Fox Searchlight.
Cool. Hi.
First of all,
question is... Oh, that's what you mean. I thought you were
No, we actually... He's our gateway... No.
I was like, I don't know.
No, Cameron is our...
No, I'd rather...
No, do it... Okay. How does it feel to have so much awards buzz going on in your first film role?
It's really exciting, but it's a little bizarre for me because it is my first movie, period, that has been released to the public that I've made. And it's you don't expect anything like that to happen. With this movie, it felt like... a really great way of making a movie. I didn't feel lots of pressure from the guys. It felt very creative and felt it was an amazing process. And I also didn't understand really distribution. I didn't understand promoting a movie. And so every day has been a new learning experience while we're talking about this movie all around the country and in other parts of the world. And so I just hope that type of buzz would then maybe attract a bigger audience. And I can't take it too seriously.
But you had this odd experience, I guess, at Sundance, because the film really sort of made a splash. So there was like a real difference, like that sort of happened during the festival, right?
I don't know. I feel like Sundance is a very interesting thing because I literally imagined it happening in a snow globe. Like, there's a world that exists, and then there's this little snow globe where things are happening, and that's how I imagine Sundance. So you're like, oh, that's great. People like it. Then you go back to the real world and, like, go to your apartment, and you go to work, and you do your thing, and everything that happened in that snow globe stayed in that snow globe. Yeah, maybe not.
Right, guess not. Okay, over here. So the question is about your character's like unawareness of sort of how to behave in social situations, and is this sort of based on real experiences, real characters that Sean researched?
You know, I know Sean. Nothing. I mean, he. A lot of this is his imagination. I'll say that. I do know that one woman said that. The what she remembers most about the first couple weeks or month when she got out, she just remembers lying to everyone the whole time. And she remembered that she saw the leader where she was, wherever she went. And so I know that those were the two main psychological points that he was trying to work off of when he was writing. And I wish I could answer that question better from his point of view. But the way I always equate it to for me is that... It's not too hard, I think, to get wrapped up in a different culture's way of living if you were to move and then come back. And, you know, I guess a lot of times you see it in movies also. Like an education just popped into my head. You get excited about this one other culture, and then you come back and your parents are like, who have you become? What have you turned into? Who is this person? I don't know you anymore. And so that's how I could relate to it in a very basic way for me.
People, I feel like people are funny, and crowds of people are even funnier. There's, I know that it just popped into my head. World War II soldiers who were otherwise church going, stayed very, controlled, wonderful little boys when they left for the war, were coming back after 1 year and saying, "Pass the fucking potatoes," and things like that. And, just 1 year amongst people, and they were. They were different people, and I think that Martha goes through a little war, and maybe it changes her, I don't know, for what it's worth.
But what do you think about the way the film is sort of comparing these two different worlds? Because it sort of starts off looking at a cult, but we also can see how imprisoning this situation is at this farmhouse in Connecticut. I mean, she feels trapped there too, and she's being expected to act a certain way I mean, this is a film where everybody's like telling other people how they should behave.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that Sean's not trying to make any social statement. He really just wanted to honestly follow different characters, and he was interested in how two siblings could end up being so polar opposites of each other. And so he figured out that Martha was here, and then it made sense for Lucy to be over here. And what does that mean? What's her life like? And so he just tried to really follow the characters instead of make a larger social point on anything.
Yeah. Okay. Right down here.
You said that this was a very different role for you. Since you did this so well, do you feel that we'll be seeing more of you as a seductive villain in the future?
Oh. Are you going to be typecast as a seductive villain now?
I don't know. And you know, it's not like the further I've done other kind of dark sort of work, but I guess never specifically as a leader of men and women. Certainly in theater and in television shows and things, I've definitely gone to the dark side a few times with characters. But I don't know if this will open more doors or even how many roles there are like that out there that there might be to get. I don't know. I think every film should have one. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know. You know, the cool thing about the word typecast is the word cast. But
right.
I've never been too worried because luckily I've gotten to do a lot of different things and I hope to continue. I just look for great material. So if it's another character like this and the piece is amazing and the people working on it are amazing and the role is somehow really great, I wouldn't hesitate to jump back in and lead a community.
And how do you both? I just want to ask about you because you both worked in theater so much. Just what it's like doing what the experience of doing film is like as an actor versus theater.
Well, I mean, I haven't been able to have the privilege of doing a long run of a show or anything because I've been in school, but and or waiting underneath a stage understudying, which is not fun. Don't do it. I had a teacher one time said acting is acting is acting. Doesn't matter what medium it is. You're basically just trying to tell a story truthfully. Just you use your body differently and your voice differently and your speech differently. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out right now, since I'm just learning the medium of film, is how much a camera actually captures. Because, you know, you hope that it captures all your deepest thoughts, but it doesn't. You have to do more than that. And so I'm trying to figure that out right now.
Yeah.
You had a pretty good handle on it.
That's
good.
Well, so much of the performance
captures a lot of you, which is great, you know, in the best way for sure. I feel like theater and film are similar in the way that it's just that in film the audience moves. You know, sometimes it's right next to you and watches your face really closely, and sometimes it's far away and sees you on a bicycle in the distance or something. So, you, I guess, act accordingly is one approach. The thing is, when you start to work on big movies and they have four cameras going, one's tight, one's wide, one's a panic cam, then you kind of don't know what to do. But it's an odd thing for an actor. But it's telling the story, right? It's trying to find the truth in a story. So similar things.
Okay.
Right? This one over case here. Closed.
Over here and then down there. Yeah, go ahead. So in terms of the flashbacks, were there some that really, like, were actually dreams, or did it, you know, did everything really happen?
Usually Sean gets to answer this, and then everyone gets to hear his annoying answer. But he's not here, so one of us has to say it. He doesn't like answering questions about what's in the film, because the questions that he wants you to be having is right. He thinks whatever people think about his film is right, and he left a certain amount of information very specifically so that he left just enough for you to create your own opinion about it. So that's Sean Durkin's answer.
I don't think there's any dream stuff personally, but I don't know. When I first read it, maybe I'll have to watch it again and see. I feel like most of those things are things that.
Yeah, for me to act it, everything was real. I'll tell you that much. So.
What was your preparation like to get into these heavy roles?
Okay, what was, and I guess this is for both, so what was your preparation like?
Well, it was a really fast, it just all happened really fast. I got cast about 2.5 weeks before we started shooting, and I was working on something else at the time, and the shoots actually overlapped about a week, so I was going back and forth, and so really the only thing I could do, and I knew how to do, was analyze a script, and the script was very thorough, so... extra research I didn't do until I actually just started talking to Sean about his experiences, talking to other people. I just try to analyze and tell the story that he wrote, basically from a point of view of someone who's experienced trauma and what that could be like and how someone could recover from that. And yeah, just from an analytical point of view, that was my process.
Formed a cult.
How did that go?
Your great. Answers are so much better. Still
going. Anybody?
You could probably get a few people to sign up.
I don't know.
But I read that you decided purposely not to sort of study the famous cult leaders. I mean, there's the people
certainly,
that are all
certainly.
All
I'm sick of
mind.
Cults. I'm just saying. And it was, I had to be dragged kind of to read this script, and then the script was so great. And then I formed a personal vendetta against the word cult while on set to call it a community and things like that. I was very militant about it. It's a community. It's not a cult. Don't know what good that did, but it was interesting. I am an over-preparer by nature, and so it was a kind of foreign territory on this one to realize quickly that I didn't want to study anyone or emulate any cult leader. I didn't even really draw from life much. I liked the idea that he'd fallen from space and was just there and was this person without a past or future. I took the time to invent a sort of past for him like actors do and then tried to forget it enough to just be present when the camera rolled. A lot of it, again, was subtraction. It was just knowing what I didn't want to do and working with the director to try to figure out the best way to tell the story, which was to be a convincing kind of guy, a believable person, hopefully, instead of the caricature of what we'd expect.
I was curious if you watched your performance during the process, like if you were looking at dailies or anything, because it strikes me it's a very... in a way, very restrained performance, and I don't know if you felt like you were like how you were able to achieve that. I mean,
I think just for fun, the last week of shooting, Sean would be like, "Oh, I want to show you this," and I would see it, and it usually was water stuff because we did a lot more water shooting than what's actually in the movie. I was in the water like the whole film,
really?
Yeah. And so he would like to show me a lot of those things because that was just really cool to look at, and. He showed me a couple shots just because we were hanging out and he had his dailies because the editor, Zach, was editing while we were filming.
Sometimes before we were filming, which was really strange.
Really strange. I don't know how he managed to do that. So he would edit full scenes together and color correct and all that stuff. And so I got to see a little bit, but nothing to inform me, mainly just out of sharing curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we have time for just a few more over here.
Yeah, you both seem to suggest that the process on the set was very collaborative, mm-hmm. But also that the director doesn't want to answer anything. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the process on the set in terms of filming.
So yeah. If you could talk about the working process, that it was very collaborative, but you're saying that Sean Durkin didn't want to answer a lot of questions.
Mainly to the audience when we do Q&As. For being on set as an actor, he would always say, well, he personally, every single character that's at the cult, every single character that's written, he has like total histories of. And so he says, I'm a source to you. If you want to figure something out on your own, you can do that, but if you have a question, I'll give you whatever answer you want. He had everything worked out. He's been working on this since 2007. We shot last year. He had the first idea in 2006. So he has everything fully thought out. And as a director, he knows exactly what he wants, and he's very specific. And he also is very... He takes care of you. You feel safe and around him. And so he's not specific and micromanaging. He's specific and open to what you have to say and do also. And he doesn't think that his word's final. He's very open to collaborating. And then you talk about something, and then you think that, you know, and then maybe you'll go with your idea, maybe you'll go back to his idea, but he's open to the conversation about everything.
But did you have a very, very specific idea of Martha's backstory, like what brought her?
It was actually mostly in the script. Sean, yeah. He wrote the script a lot more fully than what actually made the film, for reasons of investors, for reasons of the actors reading it, for all those reasons, for him, for us. And so a lot of it was already in the script. Just by nature of making a movie, independent film, we had to cut pages down every day. Then, so we cut it down by that. We cut it down when we were rehearsing, figuring out what was needed, what wasn't needed. And then he kept cutting down further in the editing room.
Hmm. Okay. Cameron, anything else from Twitter?
I do, actually. I think it may be a variation of what Oscar asked, but question for Elizabeth. Watching the movie, I saw more continuity between the cult and the lake house than perhaps the more obvious clues that Sean Durkin gives us. Were you able to play within the same mindset at both locations?
Were you able to? Well, this person saw a lot of continuity between the two different worlds at the cult and at the farmhouse. Were you able to? Yeah, what are there differences in your approach in those two different places?
it was really interesting to totally switch after the farm. Everything about the farm, I always wanted to be this progression, as I said earlier, of her finding her feet, her finding a purpose, her finding people where she belongs and that love her. And then it was interesting when we moved to the lake house because we weren't shooting in order of being at the lake house. We kind of just hopped in the middle for the first day. And it was an interesting balance that first day to try and figure out what her mannerisms were like after the first week of being there. How odd or awkward or was she? So it was definitely a difficult balance. And I definitely treated everything a little bit more heightened. She was hyper aware of her surroundings at all times and who was watching her and her every making sure that everything she did wasn't coming off as weird to someone else. So it was just like she was put underneath the microscope for me in the lake house. And I think that informed physicality and actions and things like that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody here. Thank everybody on Twitter. And good luck with the film once it's out there.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.